Thanks for joining us on episode 456 of the Inspired Stewardship Podcast.
I'm Wade Galt. I challenge you to invest in yourself, invest in others, develop your influence, and impact the world by using your time, your talent, and your treasures to live out your calling. Having the ability to live to work instead of working to live is key, and one way to be inspired to do that, listen to this. The Inspired Stewardship Podcast with my friend, Scott Mader. Soul work where you're doing what you just feel moved to do and you feel alive and people pay you to do it. Or maybe they don't pay you to do it, but it's soul work. What you feel vocationally called to do, soul work. And sacred work being work that maybe you're not like so lit up by it, but it pays the bills.
Welcome and thank you for joining us on the Inspired Stewardship Podcast. If you truly desire to become the person who God wants you to be, then you must learn to use your time, your talent, and your treasures for your true calling. In the Inspired Stewardship Podcast, you will learn to invest in yourself, invest in others, and develop your influence so that you can impact the world. In today's interview with Wade Galt from the 4-Day Workweek about investing in yourself, Wade shares with you why the way you work affects way more than the money you make. Wade and I also talk about how work affects your family and your spirit, and Wade also shares his top tips and philosophies on investing in yourself and lots more. You know, one area that a lot of folks need some help with is around the area of productivity. Getting not just more things done, but actually getting the right things done can be really, really tough. I've got a course called Productivity for Your Passion that's designed to help you do this and then to hold you accountable and walk with you so that you can tailor productivity not just to be getting more done, but actually getting the right things done. What's more, we take the approach of looking at your personality and how you actually look at things in the world and tailor the productivity system to your personality. Because the truth is, a lot of the systems that are out there are written really well for somebody with a particular personality type, but if you have a different approach to things, they just don't work. But there's tools and techniques and approaches that you can take that will work for anyone. And we help you do that in Productivity for Your Passion. Check it out over at inspiredstewardship.com/launch. Wade Galt is an entrepreneur and small business owner who helps people create the life, the lifestyle, and the legacy that they most desire. Wade runs the 4-Day Workweek Academy with the goal of inspiring 4,444,444 people to implement a 4-day work week. Wade uses his 15-year experience as an employee and then 15 years running his own software company, over 30 years of experience, to teach others to create the life that they most desire now as a coach through his podcast, The 4-Day Workweek Entrepreneur, through his books, and through his courses. Welcome to the show, Wade.
Thanks so much for having me, Scott. I really have been looking what you're up to. I really like what you're doing, the framework of how you're inspiring people, and I'm just glad to be part of it.
Well, I know you'll bring lots of values to the listeners, and thank you for joining us. So let's jump right in. If you have the limiting belief that the only way to succeed in business and in life is by working 7 days a week and 60 hours a week, then this may help. Wade, would you share why you believe that this idea of the 4-day work week is not only achievable, but a basis for real success?
Sure. So a few things. A lot of anything that we break through on or make changes on, whether it's the 5-minute mile or landing on the moon or different things, maybe the landing on the moon's a bigger one, but 5-minute mile or other achievements, very often we assume they can't be done, and that in and of itself just forbids it, prevents it from happening. And in a real simple way, I try to make things very simple with people and say, look, at some point, you may be made, I'll throw out a number, maybe you made $5 an hour. And then maybe you made $10 an hour. Then maybe you made $20 an hour. So if you went from $5 to 10 and you doubled your income, and then from 10 to 20 and doubled your income, and again, maybe you've gone beyond that since, there's nothing that said you had to keep spending at that kind of a rate. You might have just made more money and said, I'm going to kind of keep my expenditures increasing at a slower level or pause them. Of course, there's certain expenditures that you need a certain amount. With $5 an hour, at least in the United States, you're probably not going to be able to pay your bills. So there's a certain point where your fixed expenses need to be taken care of. But then there reaches a point where there's that extra money. And that extra money could mean extra goodies. Or in my case, what I like to first do is lock in and say, I want to get my free time first. I want to go from, let's say, 6 days or 5 days down to 1 day less. So from 6 days to 5 days or 5 days to 4 days, and simply lock that in, because for me, the extra day is worth it. And what it's like when you're only working 4 days a week, even if it's 10-hour days. Now, I prefer an 8-hour workday or 8.5-hour workday. That's just kinds of my sweet spot. But some people, when they're told it has to be 4 times 10, they say, well, I don't want that. And I understand that. In certain jobs, that might not be very desirable. But when you truly have 3 days off, in my case, my Friday, I'm married. My wife and I have 2 kids. We have a 10-year-old and a 13-year-old. My Friday, most of the time, unless it's summer, the kids are in school. So I get to go to the beach. Sometimes my wife comes. Sometimes she doesn't come. I get to play volleyball. I get to pretend I'm a kid again. And I just like to get some me time. And one of the worst things I did as a father in the first 6-7 years of our marriage is I decided to stop having time for my volleyball. So we got married, and a few years later, we had kids. And I thought, well, you know, the best thing I can do as a dad is to always be there for them, like literally always. And I gained a lot of weight. I wasn't feeling very happy. I wasn't getting the release. I wasn't getting quality time with my guy friends. And so it really wasn't a good thing. I thought I was being noble. And that was kind of the worst part, was here I was, you know, not going out partying, not, I was just trying to work harder. And when I started back playing, my wife said, no, please go do that. You're grouch when you come home. And she didn't use the word grouch, and she was right. And so now on Fridays, have time to do that. Our family sometimes goes with other friends to the beach on Fridays. And then I get these 2 extra days of a full weekend. I have time to relax, time to watch TV if I want, or football, or whatever it might be. But by the time Monday comes, I'm really excited and ready to work, legitimately wanting to work. And some of the work I do, I love. Some of the work I do pays the bills and I like it, but I don't love it. So I don't get to do, to be really clear, some people say, well, you're going to do everything you want. Nope, I don't get to do what I want always, not even close. But I get to live the life I want, and I get time for the most important things. So for me, that's the more important piece. And so it really is that question of, at what point do you start trading your money for your time? Because you're always doing that. The only question is whether you're aware of it or not. And how much free time do you need, and how much, you know, how many goodies or things do you need, and what's that best balance for you? So for me, it's very doable. If that's a focus, it might take a while, but it's something that can be done if that's a primary focus. Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course, somebody in a corporate 9-to-5 job where their employer expects them to be there 5 days a week, it's a little different situation for them. But you know, as an entrepreneur, you often can have a little bit more control over that. So how do you work with people that are, maybe feel like they don't have that control over their schedule in thinking about this kind of concept?
It's a great question. So that's where I started. I was working for a large corporation, very good company, still do some work with them today, love them. But I was saying, hey, I'm getting a certain amount of results. At this time, I was single and, you know, making more than enough money. I'm like, hey, I'll just work one less day per week and you can prorate my salary. No problem. Can we do that? So mathematically, it would have been fair. And by the way, I'm still really only focusing for about 32 hours a week anyway. I mean, I'm not lollygagging, but there's only so much focus we as humans can do. In fact, there's research that shows it's 5 to 6 hours a day is kind of the peak amount. And so I first approached that and I was told no, very simply no. And the reason of the no was, Wade, we believe that you can do that, but if we do it for you, we have to do it for everybody. That's a very common reason. It's a legitimate reason. So a couple things. In my case, I slowly moved towards becoming an entrepreneur. And there's so many more ways today than there were years ago. You can start your online business. You can become a freelancer at a place like Upwork.com or any of the other freelancer sites, and you can start your own side gig. You can start a side business and ease into it over a 5 to 7 to even 10 year period really easily these days compared to before if you're willing to put in 8 to 10 hours a week. But in addition to that, when I advise my clients who I have a software business that helps small business owners compensate their team members. And so I'm on both sides of the conversation and they'll say, well, Wade, my team members want to be able to get more time off. Should I give them a 4-day work week? And this might sound kind of mean, but my answer is no, you shouldn't give it to them. What you should do is show them where they can earn it, where you say, hey, if you can get this result, I'll give you this. And so maybe on a monthly basis, if you get this result this month, then next month you have a 4-day work week, or it could be 1 day off or 2 days off or whatever it might be. So the ability to earn paid time off definitely as an employer is a best practice. It's almost necessary if you want to get any of the good millennials. A lot of people talk about the millennials this and they don't like the millennials. Well, because if you're an employer, the best 20%, or let me reward that, the most entrepreneurial 20% millennials aren't working for anybody. They're working for themselves. So you don't get to see them. They're working for themselves doing their own thing. Maybe you'll see them if you're hiring freelancers. And then there's another 20% or so-ish that are following, whether it's Gary Vaynerchuk or all these people, they want to start their own business. So the in general, and this is a generalization, but a lot of the millennials that are coming to you as an employee, you've already filtered out the most entrepreneurial ones. Not the best people or quality-wise. It's not a judgment on their character. But as far as entrepreneurially, they just won't, you know, the other ones won't work for you. They're already traveling the world. They're already doing the things that we've talked about. And so from that perspective, again, it's one of the things where you can ease into it. And you could say to your employer, well, tell me, what result do you need? Because I want you to pay me for results. Now, to an employer, that's music to my ears. Okay, let's say, use a real simple example. Let's say we wash cars and you wash 40 cars in a week. And just let's just say, to keep things simple, in 40 hours. Well, if you could wash 40 cars in 32 hours, I might be interested, but that hasn't really, when I talk to my small business owner friends, they're like, wait, but that hasn't gotten me anything yet. You tell me you can wash 50 cars in 32 hours. Now we're on to something, because now I'm getting something more. I'm keeping one of my best team members. I'm keeping them from leaving because employee turnover costs are just
astronomical,
devastating. But at the same time, you're allowing that person to say, I'm worth it. And so one of the things, I talked with a friend who's helping organize this, you know, sort of more of the movement of the 4-day work week. I just, you know, we had this conversation. She knew it already. She's like, wait, I've got to be careful, because some people are approaching it as a labor movement right. And it runs into the same challenge that the minimum wage runs into. It's a great idea, but if the company doesn't make the money to afford it, then they can't. It's not a matter of, are they nice guys or gals? So in McDonald's case, if you push them too much, then they open more kiosks, and it doesn't make them evil if they're looking to make a profit. That's, you know, those are two different things. They might or might not be evil. I don't know. But at the end of the day, there's still math. So you saying to me as the government or somebody, Wade, you've got to help your employees work 4 days. So I can't pay them the same and work 4 days. I can pay them a prorated amount. So there's a middle point where you say, look, I already speak your language as the employee. How can I get you what you're looking for? And the deeper you get into of, well, in most organizations, this person needs to hit some certain company target or this or that. And sometimes it might be, hey, if I help you hit these targets, can you just not be as on top of my schedule? Let me work from home 1 day for a week, as long as the work gets done. And that's ridiculously possible these days. There's so many people that do that. And so you might never officially get it, but if you're getting the results and they allow it and it's all, you know, win-win, then that can work that way too.
Yeah. I had a lot of the same things in my corporate job. At one point, they started letting us work from home 4 days a week. And so I was working from home 4 days a week. And then they basically, because there were some people that were abusing it, they took it away from everybody, you know, and now all of a sudden I was back to having to go into the office and I could only work from home 1 day a week. And I got frustrated with that because I was performing, you know, I was actually more productive at home by far because, you know, and could show that and could document that and could actually, you know, wait, I'm getting... Because I have an hour, at that time I had an hour long commute each way. And so, you know, but by the time I got to the office, I was tired, I was frustrated. My commute from my office today is 30 seconds. You know, I walk downstairs, get a cup of coffee, I'm at work. And that makes you more effective a lot of times. It makes you more focused, it makes you more productive. And it was one of these things where I was looking at it and I'm going, wait a minute. So there's somebody not doing well, so you're going to punish me. You know, why not actually just stop them and bring them back into the office? Not a problem. But so eventually, because of that, I transitioned to part time, and then I transitioned into self-employed. You know, and like you said, I did that stair step. I built it up over time. I didn't make a sudden leap. So I know, like, I think I'm not putting words in your mouth, but what I heard from you saying there is not the storm out because you don't get your way kind of mentality, but build the runway and build the life and design the life that you want. And if that's working a corporate 9-to-5, okay, great. Knock yourself out. Love it. You know, but if it's not, here's some ways you can transition. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. And so two or three things to piggyback on with what you said is, number one, yeah, it's not going to happen right away. And I wouldn't say always, because always is not a good thing, but for the most part, it takes 2 to 3 years minimum, usually 5 years, to get a true business to be up and going. Mm-hmm. You might have a good hit. You might have a good sale. You might have a good product for a short period of time. No different than a pop singer might have a one hit wonder sensation versus building a fan base and a platform and so on. So if you have that expectation, say, okay, I'm just going to build that in. And I'm not going to worry about that. I'm going to communicate with my employer about, look, hey, here's what I'd eventually like to go. And then also, when you consider, at least in the United States, that there's so many small business employers, that's the other shift people might have to make. And I'm not saying, but as a generalization, but very often, the larger a corporation is, the more they kind of have to be inflexible in certain things, because that's just the nature of having, you know, 100,000 people working for you. It's harder to accommodate each situation. Whereas in a smaller business, you might find that it's much more doable. So there's a lot of in-betweens. There are tons of small business employers looking for good employees. So if you can do that, great. And then just as a last piece on that, a friend of mine who's an entrepreneur recently, you know, we were talking, there's two or three of us that work together in this small group. And he said, gosh, well, you know, he kind of put his head down. I'm going to be working for a company. And I said, well, what are the, you know, tell me about it. He's like, well, they do the work that I love. I'm going to learn all this new stuff. I'm like, okay. I said, don't get caught up on this entrepreneurial. Entrepreneur is just a word. Don't turn it into something that it's, because some entrepreneurs work their tails off, work 80 hours a week, never see their families, and their life is miserable. And they'll tell you that. And then, so there's not magic to being an entrepreneur, but it is one of those things in the long run. Eventually, yeah, it's nice to have control over your own decisions, but when you're an employee, you have one boss. When you're an entrepreneur, you have 500 bosses or 100 bosses. Those are your clients, and every one of them impacts your income. So it's not necessarily better, but it's certainly different. I prefer it. But yeah, it takes a while, and if that's something you want to do, it's definitely worth it.
So you know, you just touched on this a little bit as we were talking about how you've had this journey from employee to entrepreneur, some of the ways that changes your mindset, your philosophy. So can you talk a little bit about how that has affected your view of work and family?
Absolutely. So for me, my experience or my journey has been, I've been blessed to have a father who's a successful entrepreneur. So I got to very early, before I even left college, watch some of my father's friends and his friends do very well financially. And I got to see that some of them, the family was happy and great, and some of them, things were miserable. And the conclusion I made was money certainly was not the variable. I would later agree with what a couple different coaches I've heard say or speakers say, that money's an amplifier. If you're happy, it's going to make you happier. If you're a jerk, it's just going to reveal that you're a bigger jerk for the most part. So it became clear to me that that wasn't the variable. And I've actually come, as I mentioned, almost more from too much focus on the family, almost bordering at times on that helicopter parent thing, to, okay, how do I find that balance? But for me, it really has been something of family, for sure, for me, comes first. It's not even a question. And it doesn't always look perfect. I don't want it to look always perfect. My kids, you know, 10 and 13, my daughter's like, yeah, can you come into career day? And she's like, you're going to wear your shorts? And I'm like, no, I said, I'll dress up a little bit better than that. and you know, but it's also good that in my case, my business is seasonal with my software. So there's times of the year where the kids see me working 50, 60 hours a week. I think that's really good. A lot of people, when they hear work less, make more, they think, oh, you're trying to be lazy or avoid work. Nope. I'm simply not having it, not wanting to have it run my life. There are certainly times where you put in more hours as a parent. When you have your, when the child's first born, you put in more hours. You hope you don't do that forever. I remember I thought I was going to almost die in the first month of no sleep, you know, and thank God it doesn't stay like that. But for me, the family is something that comes first. And what I found is that the people who are attracted to doing business with me and the people that my kids now, their mentality and the kids that they hang out with, I don't like to brag on my kids because I don't think I did it. I think it really does take a village and it's all a lot of influences. But I love watching my kids not get too caught up in either the thing, the gadget, the toy. They really are more involved in the experience. And I think their generation has that. They're what, Zoomers, whatever, Generation Z. So they already have that as part of their generation anyway. But so for me, yeah, the family, that's how I really measure my life, by Friday, Saturday, Sunday, more than I do by Monday through Thursday. And it's not just binary of one or the other. There's a little bit of overlap, but on the weekends, I'm not working. Once in a blue moon, if something explodes or somebody says, hey, your website's completely down, yes, I'm still human. Or if there's a really good workshop, but for the most part, I'm not working on the weekends. And that allows me, I'll never worry if I was fully present with my kids. My kids will never be able to, and this is not as a defense, but I just know from talking, I'm fully there for them, at least at certain times. And so I'll never, God willing, have that thing where I say, gosh, did I spend enough time with them? Have I done some stupid stuff? Absolutely. Yeah. Continue to. But wait, it'll never be that I didn't. No. But it'll never be that I didn't make time. I didn't make that investment time available. I know I've made that and I continue to make that. And sometimes some of the best things with your kids just happen when you're just present and you're just listening, because then there's no schedule, there's no agenda. And so many kids these days have so many schedules of what they're supposed to be doing. And if they don't get in the right school by kindergarten, that their lives are screwed up and whatnot. And just when they can just download to you and I can just be present. And I like to talk a lot, but I try to best at those times, just really kind of listen and take in their world. And that's so huge to them. It's so validating. It's so important for me to understand them. So yeah, that's my main reason for all of this. So for me, if you can work 5 days and you're getting in that family time, great. So some people will say, wait, actually, I want to work school days. Well, that would be pretty much a 5-day work week with summers off. Okay, potato, potato. It's not, there's no magic to 4 days, but definitely having time for life. Whether you're single, whether you have kids, whether you don't, I happen to believe there's a God, whether there is or isn't, I believe, and we said what in psychology, it works for me. So it's efficacious. It works for me. But I just think there's also much more going on in addition to what's going on in my laptop and whatnot. And I love doing that 4 days a week. But the other 3 days, there's other things going on. And to me, if I'm fixated in one, even if I'm single, even if I don't have kids, to me, you're missing out on something. So if you're thinking this thing, oh, no, wait, see, I'm growing this big empire. Okay, well, growing an empire has never been done. Let's see, I'm making lots of money. Well, that's never been done. There's never been a movie about a guy or a gal who made lots of money, thought that it was the path to happy. Never been done. Of course, that's like a template. It's an archetype. So there's more going on. And so if you're wondering, I invite you, ask your friends. If you're not sure, or definitely if you have kids, ask your kids. If you're even thinking maybe you don't have as much time with them as you'd like, ask them, because they'll tell you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got a 16-year-old, and one of the things I like about, you know, now being a full-time entrepreneur, and I've done that for 2 years now, I was a part-time entrepreneur, you know, for 7 years before I transitioned to doing it full-time. Talking about you were talking about the length of time it can take to transition.
Okay, there you go, yeah.
You know, there you go. And about one of those years, I actually kind of took off because I moved into senior management in my corporate job, and I was working 80, 90 hours a week just doing that. And so I didn't have the 8 hours a week on the side. But regardless, you know, about a 7-year transition and then 2 years doing it full time. One of the things I love about the 2 years now is, you know, when my son has a football game, he's in band, I'm at the game, you know, yeah. And if a client wants to schedule a call during that time, I can say, I'm sorry, I've already got a commitment.
Absolutely.
And it's not a big, you know, there's not a big debate about it. There's not a worry about it. There's not a concern about it. That's just the way it is. And what I've discovered is clients are very understanding of that. You know, I think a lot of times we worry about, as a business, and if I'm not available, if I don't answer emails right away, if I'm not available 24/7, you know, then my business is going to fail. Not in my experience. How about you?
Oh, so first of all, and I say this jokingly, but it's true. Think about high school. Which guy got the date, the guy who asked 50 girls every single second, or the guy who maybe asked once in a while. When you tell your clients, hey, you know what? I can't at this time, but I can do it at this time, especially as an entrepreneur, try it. Hey, even if short term, I'm off this Friday, try it for a while and see what happens. What you start doing, even if you're using that Friday as a work day, isn't in a transition or whatnot, when they start realizing your time's less available, I've had people say, oh, wow, Wade, thank you so for taking time with me. I realize you're very busy. And the funny thing is I've been doing the same thing. It wasn't a gimmick. It was legitimate choice. I'm not going to be available on Fridays. And I tell people, and I have a software company and software to tell people, look, if you're going to do business with me, I'm not here on Fridays. And at times my software business has been big enough where I've had team members. And recently, last few years, I haven't wanted to drive it as much. So I kind of let it settle to my best clients. And I chose not to do that. And I just tell people, look, I want you to know, I don't believe in software emergencies. This is your payroll for your team members. I want them to be paid well. But there's 4 days a week, you can let me know what I can help you with. So if you're going to wait till the last minute on your payroll day and say, oops, oh, it's a big emergency, so I'm just not going to be there. And if you're not okay with that, please don't do that to yourself. But our software is awesome. And so on those 4 days, yes, I deliver. I deliver very well for them. They don't care what days you deliver from, as long as when you say you're going to deliver for them, that you deliver for them. At least it has been my experience. And they'll respect you more. And especially if you actually start calling it out, they'll say, oh, what's this guy doing? Or what's this gal doing that they know something I don't. And the truth is, you either do know something that they don't, or you're implementing something they don't. And that's real.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So thinking about, what you just said about you've got a software business and you kind of gotten to a point now where you're not driving it forward as much. That was the language that you used. And I think a lot of times for us, we've touched on it a couple of times in this, but we sort of lose sight of the spiritual nature of work. Work is unto the Lord, working as a calling, however you want to phrase it. And there's a million different expressions that people use. But I think it is really important for us as believers to find a balance between, the spiritual, work, family, all of these different components of our life. Can you share, or would you share, some of the things that you've done over the years to kind of unpack and understand the spiritual nature of your work?
Sure. So first thing for me is, there's nothing more spiritual than a person saying what's important to you that, makes the world a better place, assuming, not really shady stuff or whatnot, but what's important to you that I can help you deliver or make happen or teach you how to do or do for you and charge you a fair investment, that it's fair to you, fair to me, where I can take care of my family and not be a burden on society. And you can be in the situation where you receive value. To me, there's nothing more spiritual than that, but that's spiritual to me. I'm going to give to you. You're going to give to me. We're going to exchange. And of course, in the business world, it is more of a trade. If you don't give me the money, no, I won't do the service for you, which is very, very, or maybe just slightly different than when we give outside of work. Although some of us still, myself included, give with expectations, which is very different than, hey, here, son, here's the car. Do what you like. Oh, dad, I just sold the car you gave me so I could buy a bike and I'm doing... Well, okay, I get, that's a gift or whatnot. But in all of that, for me, a lot of the work I've over the years listened, one of the first people I listened to just incessantly was Zig Ziglar. And he had a very good sense of the more sort of, I call it sacred work. Like to me, and again, I don't know, this is just my distinction. I was talking about soul work, where you're doing what you just feel moved to do and you feel alive and people pay you to do it. Or maybe they don't pay to do it, but it's soul work. What you feel vocationally called to do, soul work, and sacred work being work that maybe you're not like so lit up by it, but it pays the bills. Sometimes I go back and forth. I've still personally not found one type of work that meets both of those definitions. So I've written books on spirituality. I've written books on parenting, personal growth, and I've chosen not charge a lot for those or charge nothing for them and give them away. And I have my software business, which again, I think is, it helps small business owners pay their team members better if they perform well in a business that helps people. So it's still, but that's more sacred work for me. It pays the bills. It's good work. It's honorable work. In my idyllic vision of saving the world, the software business isn't part of it. And yet it's very grounded in reality. So to me, this whole thing of, having something be grounded and at the same time be spiritual at the same time. I remember hearing a quote about, is it a priest or a monk or a Buddha or whatever, where one of them, the teacher speaks to the student and says, how long have you spent praying? He says, well, I spent 20 minutes praying or meditating, whatever it was today. And he says, I think I need to improve my practice. I'm going to meditate, five times as much. He's like, no. Meditate just as much. Chop some more wood, carry some more water, do some more grounded things where you're serving people. Pick up the shovel, pick up the hammer. As I've always told people, I love, for example, Habitat for Humanity is one of my favorite charities. I need to get back doing it again. My kids are younger, so the age thing. But because you kind of throw aside all ideologies, pick up a hammer. Either pick up a hammer or don't. I really don't care your ideology, your spirituality, or whatever. Just do something. And so I think in our work and in our service to our family, our service to others, I think we can serve, and certain things we'll choose to call work and we'll put a dollar amount on those. And certain things we'll know they're a hobby. Certain things, I joke with people. I'm in a very interesting situation with this 4-day work week coaching. I've spent the last year and a half, because I'm so passionate about it, really pushing it. And that's the word, pushing and driving and almost too much to get it out there. And I've told some of my friends, I don't know why I'm working an extra day and a half a week to get people to work 4 days. I'll actually just be working three. And so at this moment, it might turn out to be more of a hobby for me, in the sense that I just share it with the world. And I've let go of, and this is where for me, some of my, whether you want to call it faith or spirituality, or belief in God or trusting the process comes in. I'm not really tied to whether or not I make money on that or not, because I'm so blessed financially. I'm in such a good situation. And I'm not making $10 billion, but I know the situation of the overall world. I'm doing well enough. I've got a roof over my head. Happy. I can work 4 days. I live in a nice part of the world. So for me, I think that's the part where sometimes we shoot ourselves in the foot. Something, there's an author, Marion Williamson, said that I loved. She's running for president now, and people are kind of having a fun time with that, because if you hear her in a short sound bite, she sounds kind of airy-fairy. But one of the things she mentioned in one of her books called Return to Love, a really interesting book, she talked about how it frustrated her seeing these actresses and actors that say that they wanted to be an actor. And she said, well, if you want to be an actor, go act. She said, but what you're saying is you want to get paid to act. That's a very different thing. If you want to be an actor, go to the community centers, volunteer. There's plenty of elderly centers that would love to have somebody come in and perform for them. But then we get tied to, well, does this pay the bills? And that's the part where I've seen there are some people who have figured out how to do what they love and make tons of money, and some people that don't. So I don't think there's a stock answer on that one. I think that's everybody's individual path. I just know my first objective is happiness. It's the whole John Lennon thing. Teacher says, what do you want to be when you grow up? He says, happy. And she says, I don't think you get the question. He's like, no, I don't think you get the question. So for me, if I'm happy and I'm paying the bills and I'm enjoying life, I'm not as worried about the day-to-day. And maybe that's one of the things that for me that I've gotten from my parents. Maybe it's my mother's side. Maybe it's my parents that are from Trinidad and Tobago, a smaller island. They have a little more, they slow down, they enjoy life more. I'm not sure where it comes from, but that for me is very important. I've not chased the money as much. I'll chase the free time more than I'll chase the money.
Yeah, I think a couple of things that you said in that, the folks that listen to the podcast regularly hear me, there's a couple of things that they've heard enough that they're probably like, Scott, shut up about that. We've got to. But I'm sorry, it's integral to how I look at the world, so I'm going to keep saying it, and they can enjoy it. The one is that this idea of both ands, I think and it's a very Western philosophy. If you study other philosophies, if you look at the, world as a whole, this is a very Western and European, belief system, where it's everything is, it's, I either do the work I love or I get paid. Well, no, wait, maybe that's not the only two options. There's other things. Or sometimes you're looking for a way to do, why not do both? Maybe there is a way you can do both. Let's explore that. Let's find out. But we have a tendency to separate things into these very clear dichotomies. This is work. This over here is spiritual. That over there is family. And we're going to keep all those buckets separate.
Yes.
No, wait. Why not let some of those buckets touch each other? It's okay. And I'm a very this for me was a struggle to start to realize this, because I am a very black and white person. And then as I've gotten older, I've gone, well, wait a minute, maybe the world doesn't always operate that way. So when it comes to our nature of work and our spirituality around that, like you, I think it's not as simple as you either live your calling and you get paid for it and you're happy, or you don't and life sucks. You know, it's you know, well, wait, there's other ways you can do this. So like you said, some people, I think, live out their calling and it has nothing to do with their career.
Absolutely. And also, and how you manage your expenses. I mean, remember years ago for when I was working on my psychology degree, my master's, I did a project on for my career counseling class, and I chose the topic of retirement. And so I asked different people, what does retirement mean for you and when you're going to get there and whatnot? And I interviewed this guy, Edwin Lugo. Edwin was awesome. Edwin, I was probably in my late 20s at the time. Edwin's only a few years older than me. Edwin, when are you going to retire? Wait, I'm already retired. What do you mean? Like, well, I like helping people. He worked for a company where he helped people manage their finances. I like helping people understand how to reach their financial goals so they can create the life they desire through investment solutions. He says, so wait, and he made a huge distinction for me. He said, wait, I'm vocationally retired. I'm not financially retired. I need to still earn money. He says, but that doesn't matter to me because I don't plan on stopping working. And then at the same time, you have people that you say, look, the less your expenses are, the more options there are available to you. If you have to make $300,000 a year and you love being a teacher, then you have to figure out how to be an internet marketing teacher. Da, 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 da. Right. If you simply can manage your expenses, you can say, I can teach at the high school, the elementary school. So a lot of it really depends. There is definitely a tie-in on the material and spiritual. Mm-hmm. If you're living more lightly, you know, people use this word enlightened, and to me, at least when it comes financially enlightened, is just you're not attached to a lot of things. And you can say, yeah, I don't need to have huge things going on financially. Well, then I can choose more because there are more options that allow me to earn that income. And if you've done any traveling around the world and seen people that are living off of, you know, a tenth of what we have, I mean, if you look at the statistics, you know, some people are living on a dollar a day or less or two. And you say, and you go to some of these places. When I went to India, blew my mind how happy some of the people were. And I'm not advocating poverty. I'm not, but I'm saying, again, it just demonstrates that the money is not the variable. Right. So if you're really clear about what's important to you, whatever that looks like, and whatever your vision of spirituality looks like, spirituality at a certain stage might just be, Wade, I make sure I have enough time for my kids and I live my values in the way I want, whether that's in a traditional way, in a quote unquote Christian way or non-Christian way. Again, I've met plenty of people who are quote unquote Christian who are nice, and I've met some who are not so nice. I've met many people who are, you know, spiritual, but say, I'm not Christian. I'm like, wow, you really act like somebody who's really nice and really, so whatever you want to call that, great, you're nice to people. I'll take that as opposed to, so again, I think a lot of times going back to your point of even the Western thing, people getting caught up in a lot of distinctions and definitions and what are you and who are you and who are you is your job. It's like, no, I'm Wade. That's who I am. Right. And I'm a father and I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a coach. I'm a husband, all these different things. But I think if you're clear about what's important to you and how you want to be in the world, that'll come through your work in some form or fashion.
So Wade, if you had to share your top two or three resources or principles, this doesn't necessarily have to be a tool. It can also just be a mindset or a principle that everyone should use to invest in themselves. What would you share?
Okay. So the first one, it's funny. It sounds like I feel like I was on a game show. Or like, well, first one, I got to go with God here. So because God pays off pretty well when you invest in God.
Exactly.
Yeah, Family Feud here. So first thing is for me, quiet time. Again, by whatever that looks like for you, that happens to me. That chair right there. If I can sit for a good 20 minutes every day and get quiet, I wouldn't call it meditation because it's not formal. I wouldn't fully call it prayer. I just sit, some people call it soaking, I just invite divine presence to just, what do I need to know? Give me a heads up, help me relax. And it can be everything from a very specific bit of an idea, an inner voice thing, hey, you need to do this today, to, wait, just take it easy, man, slow down, to don't yell so much, to whatever it might be, or hey, you're doing great. So that, making time for that, for some people it's going for a walk and they get that, but that, so it's somewhere between in that area, or if you're not into the God thing, or whatever, quiet time with yourself, that small voice inside you have. So for me, 20 minutes of that in some form or fashion is number one, because that's where you get to at least hear your voice. So if you say, you know, invest in yourself, I get to hear who I am, or I believe I hear the divine part of my voice or something. I certainly can't explain it, but it usually leads me, if I listen well enough, and if I'm sincere in listening, it leads me in the good directions. So that's the first thing. The second thing, and I must be getting older, because just basic, some form of movement. I play a lot of beach volleyball on Fridays, and because I play one big, I do it the sort of weekend warrior way. I play like 5 hours in a row in the hot sun. I do a lot of yoga-like stretching. I don't always do it in a sacred way to call it yoga, but because I'm just maintaining my body and I just want to be able to show up at the beach again the next Friday. But something that's physical that keeps energy going, and especially you and I, you sit at a desk. It's so easy to spend 8 hours at a desk or 10 hours and not move. And that will start creeping up on you. And, you know, you see people, you know, one of my kids asked me, you know, why do some people have a frown on their face when they're older? And some people have a smile. And I said, well, as far as I understand, I can't prove it, but that's kind of, you know, what have they done most of their life? Or you look at people's body posture, whatnot. So physically getting out and doing something. And then the third thing is just at some point writing down whatever your top 2 or 3 goals are and just looking back at those. Just, are you on top of that? As far as investing in yourself, I think those are 3 things that when I do them, I don't always do them, but when I do them, they work and pay off really well for me.
You can follow Wade on Twitter at the4day_workweek, or you find him over on his website, 4dayworkweek.com. He's also active on Instagram and Facebook under the4dayworkweek. You can find his podcast, The 4-Day Workweek Entrepreneur, over on iTunes. I'll have links to all of this, of course, in the show notes as well, including links to the books that Wade was talking about and some of his other resources. Wade, is there anything else you'd like to share with the listener?
No, just, well, first of all, thank you, Scott, for having me. And again, whether you believe that there's a master plan or a God or not, or this or that, whether you want to call it your inner voice, God, just make time for that. Listen to that and follow that more than any coach, more than me or Scott or anybody. Make that your first thing. If you follow that, I think you're going to find, or at least I found, and so many people I've talked to have found, that most things kind of turn out in a lot better way than you might have ever even imagined.
Thanks so much for listening to the Inspired Stewardship Podcast. As a subscriber and listener, we challenge you to not just sit back and passively listen, but act on what you've heard and find a way to live your calling. If you enjoyed this episode, please, please do us a favor. Go over to inspiredstewardship.com/iTunes rate, all one word, iTunes rate. It'll take you through how to leave a rating and review and how to make sure you're subscribed to the podcast so that you can get every episode as it comes out in your feed. Until next time, invest your time, your talent, and your treasures. Develop your influence and impact the world.